everybody. Thanks for joining this special edition of the Ball 5 podcast. The 1989 Texas A&M baseball team will be holding their 35-year anniversary this weekend during the Georgia series at Bluebell Park. Unfortunately, John Byington will not be able to make it. He's got a busy weekend. But I was able to catch up with him and reminisce a little bit about that 1989 season, as well as that April night where he created a little Olsen magic. First of all, let me just check in and see how you doing, man. Everything going okay?
Yes, good, thanks. I'm back in baseball after 26 years of coaching and got out for about 20 months, and now I'm loving being back in. It's so, you know, doing good. Families, kids are older. They're all in their 20s, happily married, and my Savior Jesus, very blessed because of him ultimately. So thanks.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's good to hear. So, let's backtrack just a little bit if we can. And I think we've talked a little bit about this before, but I asked you what got you to A&M? Why'd you choose A&M? Because I know you had a lot of offers.
Right. So Coach Lawler and Coach Johnson really did. They really rolled out the red carpet for me. They took time. They came to my home. They made several phone calls and took time and just showed a lot of interest. I mean, I had some other interests from other schools, but they by far showed the most interest and just won me over big time. And then, like I said, I told you that I went to a couple of games. One, probably April that spring of my senior year in high school, and watched you and y'all play that year, and that just won me over going up and watching a game and seeing the Olsen Field and the way you guys played. That was kind of the final straw.
Yeah, I can appreciate that because I remember Coach Johnson was recruiting me that year before or 2 years before, and he drove. Of course, they won the internet or anything, so he drove 3 hours to Dallas from College Station. And back in high school, you play what, 20, 25 games maybe, and right. He probably drove to about six or seven of them of mine, right. And I was like, okay. And Texas offered me my scholarship, but they never saw me play. So, it was like you said, they show the interest. They did the legwork and, you right. appreciate that. And then on top of that, like you said, when you came and you saw a game, it's also the atmosphere with the fans and the 12th right. man. When you're sitting there in the stands and they're hollering and doing all that stuff, it kind of gives you goosebumps, if you will.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. That definitely did that.
And so I think kind of moving forward into that, once you signed, I want to talk a little bit about the 89 season and just the Texas series. Cause I covered a lot of the 89 season with Jim and Mike in an earlier episode, but Big John, known for his doing a little Olsen magic against Texas. I mean, that's got to bring a smile to your face, man. And I know you're very, very humble. And you don't like to talk about it, and probably don't enjoy the praise, but that was a big deal, and a big deal to a lot of fans because, a lack of a better way, Texas had been smoking us.
Right, right.
So that three-game series, I know, I think Mike said y'all got rained out and then had to play the next day and then two games on Sunday, but y'all lost that first game 6-2, but you actually homered in the ninth?
Yes, sir.
Do you remember who that was off of?
It was off Dressendorfer. He started game one and pitched really well, won the game. And I just, I got that late inning home run, the ninth. I think he pitched a complete game, if I remember correctly. But that was one of the two runs we scored, was a ninth inning homer off of him.
Yeah, and so I was actually thinking about that. I was thinking it was Dressendorfer, and I told – the guys, I faced him the year before, and he was like the first pitcher that I ever faced that really challenged you with a fastball inside. I mean, he threw me inside all the time, where a lot of those guys would avoid you with a metal bat.
Right.
And so did he challenge you that at bat?
He did. Okay, so I remember the two game winners a lot better. I don't really remember that one that great. But he definitely pitched inside, and he had my number my freshman and sophomore year, or both those years as well. And so, yeah, I was geared up because you're right. He did come inside, and the first home run on the Sunday, the walk off was definitely, he was in relief. Of course, he came in. They brought him in, you know, to try to shut us down. And he came in first pitch fastball, and it was in. But of course, that's you know, this part of what we do is try to make adjustments and be ready. And so, and I got enough of the barrel on it to get it out there. Yeah,
that was my thing, because I was like, okay, he hit that off Dressendorfer, but didn't Dressendorfer just throw 9 innings the night before?
Yeah, the Friday night. He actually had Saturday, had a day in between because of the rain.
Okay.
And then the Sunday, but it was relief. That home run off him was, I think, if I remember correctly, they walked Chuck before me in Knobloch, you know, they to load the bases. Maybe it wasn't no, Jason Marshall had come in the game for Chuck. I think they walked him, not intentionally to get to me, but I don't remember if I was Dressendorfer's first hitter or second hitter, but they had brought him in to try to shut us down.
Well, I know one thing for sure. You were his last hitter.
Right. You betcha.
And I know when we talked earlier, you were saying, you know, a lot of things had to happen in that inning to get you to the plate, because I believe you guys got 9 runs in the ninth because you were down by 5 or 6 or something before they loaded the bases. And I think you gave a lot of credit to the rest of the guys, because didn't you lead off that inning?
I led off the inning and had a hard contact. Hit the ball hard to the shortstop and kind of ate him up a little bit. I think it was ruled an error, but it was, but that's, it started off with that. And then they actually had a chance to force out at second, and they threw that away on an error. So they helped us, you know, I think Terry Taylor had a 2-run single and got it tied to me and there at the end.
Well, how great is that? You only need a sack fly and you hit a grand slam, dude. That was awesome. gives me goosebumps just talking about it. So going into the third game, and you didn't know this, but I was actually, and I told Mike and Jim this, that I was actually in London, Ontario, Canada, in AA with Detroit. Mm-hmm. And the owner had a bar. The owner of the team had a bar kind of around the corner. So I didn't see the first game because we were playing. So I knew y'all were on ESPN the night game. It was in the middle of hockey playoff season in Canada, no doubt. Yeah. And I'm in a hockey Canadian bar asking them to put on ESPN so I can watch this college team play baseball around all these rowdies, right? And so anyway, as luck would have it, it was actually a day off on the playoffs. But those guys wanted to watch like the highlights of the night before and the, you know, what's coming, you know, it was all hockey, hockey, hockey. But by the end of it, I had them up cheering and standing and clapping for our team. And it was awesome. I'm getting goosebumps talking about it right now, because they were cheering and yelling when you hit the home run. Just so I want you to know, there's a bunch of Canadians in a bar that were hockey fans that were Big John fans at that time. So it was pretty cool. But
I remember you called me too. I remember after the game, you had called, didn't you?
Yeah, I think I did.
And we talked. You said, "Hey, man, I saw the game," and I remember you calling after that game. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So, but just to kind of talk about that a little bit, you ended up hitting a 3-run homer because it was 5-5, and what I'm seeing is that they had a chance to get Chuck out on a ground ball, but Terry slid into second pretty good. And then Chuck, who could obviously run, beat the throw, which allowed you to come to the plate. And so those were your two guys on. And and then you faced a reliever, I believe.
Yes, sir.
It wasn't Dressendorfer again, was it?
Right. So there's a backstory with that Gaskell. I think his first name is Chris Gaskell. He was a good reliever for him, and he was a slider guy, and he threw a lot of sliders. And I faced him in that first game. In the first game, you know, that we came back in, I saw him. He threw me sliders, and so I was literally sitting on the slider. I went ahead, and as a hitter, sometimes I normally don't sit on a slider, but I was in that case. And he, sure enough, he just laid it in there. just to get ahead of the count. And not, you know, it was just right over the plate, and so that, you know, I was ready for it. You know, so that got that one, got the barrel on that one really well. So,
well, good for you sitting slider and getting slider, because usually when I sit slider, they throw me a fastball. So I'm a bad guesser, so I had to stop guessing. But yeah, so you don't. You were a guy that didn't show a lot of emotion, right? You were, you know, when you hit the home run to the grand slam the game before, you know, you ran around the bases, cool, calm, collective, and then of course you celebrate at home plate with everybody, and then you get to the night game, and I was telling the guys, I watched the video, I think it's 1989, Texas A&M baseball, and I want to say it's called A Sweet Season. Do you remember right. that YouTube video that DD made?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, he made it.
I watched that because I told those guys I didn't get to really follow the 8 season, obviously, because I didn't, a lot of games weren't on TV that I could see and stuff while I was in the minor leagues. So I watched that video and it was awesome. But one thing I noticed was when you hit that ball on the last game to win it, there was a little bit of a, you might call a bat flip, a little bit. Maybe, you know, and this is not John Byington. This is not John Byington. There was a little, I don't know if you kind of flipped it and threw it to the ground, but, you know, if that was in today's baseball world, I don't know where that bat would have ended up on a bat flip, but you got a little pumped up because then you pumped your fist around the bases.
Yes, and it's weird. That is a weird thing because I don't remember flipping the bat, but I obviously it's on the video. It's just right there. And
video don't lie, man.
Yeah, and I guess that was the level of focus that was going on at that point. And it was just a release because that was such a big – because, you know, like you said, Texas had our number, and we were so focused on winning the series. And to actually accomplish it in that moment, it was just like just the ultimate release of all the focus and effort put into that day.
Yeah, and I think like you said, the emotion, and then you have the fans cheering, and just the whole day was just a, you know, full day of baseball and – emotion, you're probably just drained, you know, right. and just, it's almost like you throw your bat down and go, all right, I'm glad this is over, you know, it's been going on for so long. But no, that was pretty cool. And you had an amazing year that year. You ended up hitting .442 for the season, which is insane, which is the second highest average in a season. Guy in 1965, I think it's Mike McClure, hit .443. So he had you by .001. You could have blooped a ball in or laid a bunt down or something and ended up at .445, you know, something like that. But
there you go.
Yeah, you had a heck of a season, man. And it was fun. So kind of take me through. I know you – so after that, you got drafted, and that was the Brewers?
Yes, sir, Brewers.
How many years did you play with those guys?
I played 6.5 years total. I guess 5.5 were with the Brewers. Yes, sir. You made it to AAA. Got into some big league spring training games. Actually broke camp with them in 1994, just to play those exhibition games in between spring training and the regular season. I played in a couple of those against against the Tigers. Actually, I played against Whitaker, and I guess were you? Because we
94,
played.
I was already in San Diego.
Okay. Yeah, 94.
Well, no, I got traded in 94, so I should have been there. I may have seen you there.
Well, it was Richmond. We played in RFK in Richmond, Virginia, and two minor league or whatever exhibition games before big. So anyway. So then the Brewers traded me the next year. I spent my last year with the Rangers in AAA. One year with the Rangers. So.
Okay, awesome. So then that moved you on into your coaching career. So kind of take me how you ended up at McMurray.
Yes, sir. So I the first coaching thing was strength and conditioning there at A&M back home.
And, well, that's fitting for Big John.
Yeah. So and that was good. It wasn't my passion, even though I was a big weightlifter. Baseball being the ultimate passion on that. But Coach Johnson gave me a shot. That was after about 9 months working with the strength and conditioning. Coach Johnson said, "Why don't you come and help us the team?" And so I spent a year as a student coach at A&M. Really enjoyed that. That's when I kind of figured, okay, I want to do this. I want to coach. I really enjoyed it. It was a great opportunity. And then spent 1 year at Shriner. From there, I went to Shriner University. That's how I got into the private school, lower level. Had a good year at Shriner. And then got on with McMurray. My friend Jason Marshall, who's an Aggie, who was on that team, you know, was our backup shortstop, backed up Chuck, and was also played pro ball, was a 4-year player at A&M.
Yep.
We became good friends, and he was at McMurray coaching. And so he kind of, along with Lee Driggers, who was the head coach, kind of, I had that connection, and they offered me to be able to coach at McMurray at a Division III school there in Abilene. Never knew anything about Abilene, but been here ever since. So I coached for 24 years at McMurray. 10 as an assistant, 14 as the head coach. And then it's just still here in Abilene. Kids, family, kids grew up here. And then after retiring from McMurray, I was out of baseball, except for giving lessons, was out of baseball for a while. Now I'm back. Coaching a 13U team, doing lessons at DBAT. And then now, and also coaching this summer in the Great Lakes. So I'm getting an opportunity to get back into college baseball with College Summer League and the Great Lakes League this summer with AI Athletes in Action coaching this summer.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's kind of full circle, if you will.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That's great. That's awesome. So did you leave McMurray because you didn't want to deal with the transfer portal?
Tell me about it. I mean, yeah, it's blown up, and the NIL, the name, image, likeness stuff to that, and yes, the college game has changed. Even being away for 2 years, it's changed so much. So I'm glad I'm getting back in. I love the summer league because I love the pro ball feel. It's wood bat. We play every day, just about. So I'm looking forward to that. We'll see where it goes from there. So just really looking forward to this summer. So.
Yeah, I was thinking about it when you said 26 years or coaching there, that you probably saw a lot of changes and had to make some adjustments in how the different athletes were coming in and the recruiting process. And I mean, you saw the whole range from the old school days, which right. I think probably me and you prefer, versus right. all the new stuff out there now. I mean, was that kind of hard to adjust to, or did you feel like you caught on pretty quick, handled it pretty well?
Some things were hard. The hardest thing for me was I had a pro style mindset, you know, and pros, there's not much sacrifice bunting. You play for the big inning. There's not a lot of stolen bases. I mean, I guess there used to be, but you kind of train your guys, you train your hitters to drive the baseball. And so when I got to college, all the other teams were putting on safety squeezes and bunting every time they had a chance. And it took me a while to adjust. And I said, okay, I'm not in pro baseball anymore. I'm in college Division III baseball. So I adjusted, but that one took me a while getting out of the developing hitter's mindset to playing for the small ball. And all that took a while, but you know, a lot of it was just I do enjoy working with that age group of young men, 18 to 22 or so, and that was always probably the thing that was the constant. Is I enjoyed working with young men there. So
did you ever get into the analytics and stuff? Was that around as you were leaving? Because it confuses the heck out of me.
Yeah, it started to my last few years. It was now I don't know that a lot of Division III schools were using it. We tried it. We got into blast motion, hitting a little bit, but never really implemented it at any significant level. Now, to get back into it, it'd be interesting if I do get back into it to see, you know, the learning curve on all that. But yeah, it's changed.
Yeah, I don't think I would do very well trying to make all those adjustments. But do you want to talk a little bit about how your faith has kind of led you through your life?
Yes, sir. Thanks, Scott. Yeah. And so when I, after the successful career at A&M and signing a pro contract, you know, those are obviously a great dream come true, having the kind of career at A&M and signing professionally. I just found myself really empty after a couple of years. and just realizing, okay, is this, you know, I just felt like I had reached some significant goals. And so I really started, kind of searching. And that's when Jesus Christ came into my life and showed me that he's what I was looking for. As much as I love baseball, great as it is, it's not a good God. There's only one God, and it's God the Father and Jesus and Holy Spirit. And, you know, he made himself known to me that's what I was looking for. That he would fulfill my need. He would give me purpose and meaning beyond what I had experienced to that point. And he has. He's faithful. He gives abundant life. He's been everything. He's given us a great family life here and a time in Abilene, growing as a family. So, it is about him. I still get that mixed up a lot, that it becomes about me sometimes. But it is about him and his kingdom and his glory. So I mean, he's the man. He's the one.
Well, you're right there. So that's awesome, man. That's cool. I want to kind of, I wonder if some of that kind of, like I said before, you're very, very humble. And I know you kind of like to deflect away from people kind of praising you and this and that. And what you did that weekend and that for your career, not only that weekend, but for your career at A&M and being a legend there, is that I think you probably value more you love the praise, obviously, but you probably value more the impact you might have had on the young men at college and who you're working with now. I would think that knowing you would appreciate that more. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. But it is. It's been a great privilege to work with all the teams that I've worked with. And I had the coach that helped me find my faith. He said, there's two things that last forever, God's word and people. And haven't perfectly applied that, but that helped a lot. And just that those are the things that last forever, and that's where we need to invest our time. And although I've been very imperfect in doing that, it's kind of helped. It's brought me back to center a lot. Is why I'm here. And I appreciate that, Scott. Yeah,
I like that back to center. That's so true. So it's a good thing. But I won't keep you much longer, but right now, so you're doing a lot of travel tournaments?
Yes, sir. Coaching this 13U team, and it's great. I love working with these young kids. I'm actually getting to coach some levels that I haven't coached before, and it's been good for me. And a great group of kids. We actually have a really good team, great group of families. So I'm traveling with them maybe 3 weekends, and then we've had three. We've got about 3 or 4 more before I leave for the summer. Yes, sir. And then doing lessons 4 or 5 days a week at DBAT here. So,
well, that's awesome. I'm sure you're enjoying that, and people are really enjoying you being involved in that and giving them your wisdom, Big John's wisdom, man. Now, I know you guys got your reunion and you're not going to be able to make it because you got tournaments and stuff and got some other stuff going on. But I know they're going to miss you there, man.
Yeah, I'll miss them too. The times we've gotten together have been a blast when I have gotten to see them a few times over the years. So I'll miss it. But it's good to see you too, Stoney. I mean, man.
We both look a little grayer, man. It's,
Yeah.
Just so the listeners know, we are on Zoom, even though I just do audio for this, but we are seeing each other because I like to see my boys. But anyway, John, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you coming on and letting us know how you've been doing and the impact that you're making on baseball and the young men out there. And it's very, very rewarding for you, I'm sure. And it's good to see.
Thanks, Dylan. Thank you for doing this Ball 5, and this is awesome. I know people are going to enjoy this, and good to catch up with you. You're a baseball legend too, man. I mean, absolutely a professional big leaguer, and a great career at A&M as well. I'm just glad that we could reconnect, and thanks for reaching out to me.
You bet, buddy. Good seeing you, man. Good talking to you, and I know people are going to be excited to hear from you.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, man. Take care. So big shout out to John for joining us here on the Ball 5 podcast.
Really appreciate him taking the time, letting us know what he's been doing since he left Texas A&M, as well as a little insight on that weekend where he created a little bit of Olsen magic. So I hope you enjoyed this bonus episode. Be sure to check us out on stonesapparel.net for some Ball 5 merchandise and benefit Alzheimer's research, as well as direct message on Instagram for any questions or comments you may have. So we really appreciate you listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Until next time.